The show will begin shortly.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could spend part of your day with us as we will get into all the latest with respect to the Giants leading you up to training camp alongside Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You could also chime in on the conversation using hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We are going to continue to preview the upcoming Giants opponents this season. Today's focus will be on the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll also get into the latest inductees set to join the Ring of Honor. That was announced yesterday by the Giants, and some latest rankings that have been circulating on ESPN.com. So certainly a lot to delve into over the next hour. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Anita, how was everything?
Everything's great, man. I know we say it each and every time around this time, and it's kind of like, man, season's going to be here like tomorrow, it feels like. I mean, this next week is gonna like just like I think fly by, and before you know it, rookies arrive. What, that Thursday next week,
next Thursday,
and then
yeah.
We are gonna be rocking and rolling all through the month of August. I've really been enjoying my golf games, so I'm at that point in my life right now where I've got to like accept that like my golf game is gonna go away, and in real life work is gonna start happening soon. So, but I'm really, really excited. I'm excited for this Giants season.
Absolutely. Next Friday will be the first practice. And it's funny you brought up golf because our guest today can relate to that since he is delaying his day on the links.
I feel the pain.
To sacrifice
that
time.
The struggle is real. The struggle is real.
To break down the Cincinnati Bengals as we continue to preview the upcoming Giants opponents. The Giants are going to host the Bengals in week 10. It'll be a Monday night affair. That will be the night of the Ring of Honor when Tom Coughlin, Ernie Accorsi, and Justin Tuck will join the Ring of Honor. Today, though, we're going to break down the Cincinnati Bengals, the opponent, and joining us is the Bengals beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer, and that is Jim Ozarski. Jim, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, it's good. And then, you know, those are like the saddest words I think any scribe could utter is, oh, yeah, we're excited for work and training camp, but the golf club, dusty. They get dusty, and that makes your eyes dusty.
I know. So, yeah, I'm there with you. It's like I'm trying to savor each and every tea time right now. But I mean, let's get right into it. And I want to kick it off with this. I'm excited for the Cincinnati Bengals season. Okay. I'm dear friends with Hugh Jackson, and it becomes somewhat of a closet Cincinnati Bengals fan because of his involvement. But as we know, he is gone. He is now the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and I know how much he meant to Andy Dalton. So, and we know how the NFL operates, right? Like, you need a stud quarterback who's going to be like wheeling and dealing for you to have success. What are your realistic expectations for Andy Dalton this season without Hugh Jackson by his side?
Yeah, and it's kind of twofold, so bear with me here for a little bit. So we'll start with Hugh and his departure, and really offensively, schematically, you won't see really any change this year under new offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi. For people who may not know that name, he's been the quarterback's coach in Cincinnati for over a decade. So he's been with Andy Dalton through his whole career. He's been with Hugh Jackson, even when Hugh was as a secondary coach when Jay Gruden was the offensive coordinator. So there's a lineage here from Jay Gruden to Hugh Jackson, now to Ken Zampezi. Familiarity, the system, yes, there will be tweaks. We'll maybe see a different play call personality from Ken Zampezi. You know, he's his own man, but the offense is the same. I mean, you know, Ken Zampezi flat out said it. There is no change. And part of that is because of the quarterback and because of his comfort and familiarity and the success that he had last year before breaking his thumb in week 13, excuse me. That's why they did that. And honestly, guys, the expectation in Paul Brown Stadium is not only will Andy Dalton pick up where he left off, but he will take yet another step forward because in their mind, it's year three in Hugh Jackson's offense, if you will, or year five or year six in this offense in general, if you think back to 2011 with what Jay Gruden implemented or started.
Jim, you laid out the fact that they have done a nice job promoting from within the system throughout the course of at least Marvin Lewis's tenure. You laid out all the offensive coordinators, and I think you could say the same thing on defense when they went from Mike Zimmer to now Paul Gunther, who also served under Mike Zimmer. How much was that the rationale behind promoting Ken Zampezi and saying, hey, you know what? Continuity has done wonders for this organization. It ain't broke. We haven't necessarily gotten far in the playoffs, but we've had good regular season success. So how much was that rationale in saying, we're not going to bring somebody new in, we're going to continue to promote from within?
Yeah, and honestly, that is 100% the rationale. I mean, you could say 5 years ago when they hired Jay Gruden, that was the shift because, you know, in 2009 they went from a division champion to 2010, four wins. Carson Palmer quits. Arguably, Marvin Lewis was on the hot seat at that point. That was the year for change. You mentioned the quarterback and having to have that guy. They feel Andy Dalton has become that guy. I'd urge your listeners to check out Cincinnati.com on Wednesday, Thursday of this week. A little hint there into 14 and what he means to this team. But that's exactly right. It was continuity. It was. Hey, for as frustrated as the fan base might be about not winning playoff games, and trust me, they're just as frustrated inside Paul Brown Stadium. However, it's very rarefied air to go to the playoffs five straight years. So you can only, you know, take the whole bushel home, get a bite at the apple by getting into the orchard, right? So they don't want to change things that have gotten them that success in the regular season. And then hopefully their quarterback play, a healthy team, which they didn't have last year, which they didn't have 2 years ago in Indianapolis, will get them, you know, be able to take home, you know, carry through that metaphor to bring those apples home. And that's a big part of why you didn't see much change again in Cincinnati.
All right, so let's talk about some additions and some subtractions. You add Brandon LaFell and you draft Tyler Boyd. Can these two wide receivers step up and really produce like we saw Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu do, who, again, both those wide receivers are now gone? So what are your expectations for the wide receiving core? Also, let me add Tyler Eifert, who is not going to start the season active because he had ankle surgery. So Tyler Croft more than likely would be the starting tight end. So offensively, we just talked about Andy Dalton, what his expectations are, but also he's got a new cast around him.
Right, and by the time the Bengals, you know, come into MetLife on that Monday night game, the expectation is, of course, everyone's healthy and back, and Brandon LaFell is that true number two, reverted to 2014 form. In New England, you know, when he caught, you know, 70-plus passes and nearly 1,000 yards, caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and Tyler Boyd will sort of be ingratiated into that slot position. But until that point, honestly, you guys hit it right in the head. There's question marks there. Tyler Eifert, you know, proved to be one of the best tight ends in football when he was healthy last year. May not be there to start the season. So that puts an onus on Brandon LaFell to prove. You know, at this point, guys, you know, 7-8 years in the league, you kind of are what you are. What the Bengals are counting on is that last year was a wash. Pup list, injuries. Brandon says, hey, for 6 weeks I'm catching balls from equipment guys. I come back and it's Tom Brady and my hands weren't ready. He's like, I wasn't ready to catch NFL passes. Now, whatever you want to say about it, he admitted it and feels he's healthy all the way around. Tyler Boyd is an interesting point, guys, because the Bengals don't like to play rookies. You know, they last year their 2015 class played the fewest amount of snaps of any in the league. So now they're going to ask this rookie to come in with an offense, honestly, that is kind of humming and clicking. And LaFell's new, but he's a vet. He can kind of pick things up. Can he do it? No one knows. And that goes back to how we started this conversation with the quarterback. And it's one of those things where they feel, you know what, if Andy Dalton's a real guy, Tyler Boyd's going to be a real receiver, you know, in sort of that third role before Eifert gets back, and then that fourth role once, you know, the tight end's there to kind of open things up.
Talking with Jim Ozarski, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Ozarski, spelled O-W-C-Z-A-R-S-K-I. You mentioned that there are some changes in the receiving core, and, you know, a way to at least take pressure off the receiving core, Jim, and to help Andy Dalton is to get that running game going. And Jeremy Hill had a tremendous rookie campaign in 14. Numbers dipped a bit. Some said maybe a sophomore slump in 15. What is the expectations for the running game this season? Even though you said the scheme is going to stay pretty much intact, what are they hoping to get out of the running game, and perhaps is there going to be more of an emphasis on that facet of the offense?
Yeah, honestly, I think best case scenario is, in their minds, is a 2014 Jeremy Hill and a 2015 Giovanni Bernard, meaning, you know, you bring Gio in and he's going to average 5.5 yards a carry. He's going to catch, you know, 40, 50 passes out of the backfield, and then you give it to Jeremy Hill, who's going to average 4.5 yards a carry on the ground and score 10-plus touchdowns. You know, once you get into that red zone area, it's kind of that bigger back. You know, I hesitate to say the thunder and lightning because Jeremy Hill's not as big as, you know, the big boys when Tiki Barber and the Giants were kind of doing their thing years ago. But that's kind of what they would hope for. Now, Jeremy Hill's a huge question mark in that he fumbled away a playoff victory in a lot of people's minds. And fumbles were an issue in college. They were an issue his rookie year. He was benched for it early last season. He says and does all the right things, but they need to see it. Is he over it? Is that an issue? You know, Marshall Faulk reached out to him, talked to him. Tiki Barber reached out and talked to him. I mean, it's, you know, can he get over that as a third-year player? Nobody knows. So I think, you know, if again, it all kind of comes back to the quarterback. You know, Tyler Eifert isn't there. Yeah, they're going to try to get that ground game on track. But if Andy Dalton can be good or be as good as he was or better, that will open up that running game. And you mentioned Hugh Jackson at the very start. Hugh, you know, it's funny. With all the formations and throwing it around, Hugh loves a power running game. The Bengals love a power running game. And if they can get Jeremy Hill on track and then bring Giovanni Bernard in on that second, third down, you know, some of those, you know, tweener situations where, you know, they want to create mismatches. In a perfect world, that's what they do. But they wouldn't be afraid to pound it, grind it out, put seven linemen tackle eligible and run it down your throat. But again, that might depend on the quarterback as well as Jeremy Hill. And is he going back to that 14 form as opposed to kind of the shaky, tentative, I'm not going to say afraid, but guy who was a little, you know, you wondered, are we going to keep the ball after we hand it off to him?
All right, let's turn our attention to what's going on the defensive side of the ball. Again, some players left, some players have arrived. Reggie Nelson, Leon Hall are gone. Carlos Dansby is there. And but at the same time, I mean, listen, let's face it, Bengals have a top 10 defense in the NFL. Do you see them steering the same course, or do you see them taking a dip in regard to those that have gone and those that are there?
You know, honestly, if 97, Geno Atkins, is healthy, they're going to stay the course. He's that good. And that was, I mean, you saw it in 13. He blew out a knee, in 14. And last year was kind of that comeback year where he really wasn't effective and things really kind of teetered from there. If Geno Atkins does what he does, they're going to be good. They'll be better when Vontaze Burfict returns from suspension in week 4. Last year, he missed the first 6 games. Yes, the team went 6-0. But in that final 10 game, they include the playoff loss. They were a top 3 scoring defense, top 5 total defense with those two guys in the center. So, yes, there was some change invariably that happens in the NFL. But if Geno Atkins is Geno and Vontaze Burfict kind of just does what he does and stays on the field, stays out of trouble on the field, actually, you know, he's off field, there are no issues there. They are counting on a top 5 defense, and really, again, guys, it's all interconnected, and that will help out any issues that they may have offensively at the start of the year if Eifert's out or if it takes time for LaFell and Boyd kind of get a chemistry with Andy Dalton.
Absolutely. Lean on your defense in terms of milking the clock and keeping your offense well rested,
right,
and so forth. That certainly goes hand in hand. when you looked at this defense coming into the offseason, Jim, it was interesting because it seemed as if the entire secondary was set to hit the market. I've never seen a team where you have, you know, just about every corner and safety on your squad and you potentially could lose them. Pac-Man Jones, George Iloka, you had Leon Hall, Reggie Nelson. They lost the latter two. They kept the former two, plus they draft William Jackson III out of Houston. You know, what do you think of the mixture between the veterans and the youth they have in the secondary? And, you know, how critical was it to try to keep some continuity back there in the corners situation as well as the safeties?
It was very critical for them. Reggie Nelson and Leon Hall were kind of, look, you know, 10-year guys, 9-10-year guys, you know, Reggie Nelson, Pro Bowl year, 8 interceptions, but honestly, at the safety spot, guys, hey, he caught the ball. He made the plays. Some of those were right place, right time. Leon Hall, as a nickel, was getting picked on late in the year. He had back issues. It was kind of time, and we mentioned continuity. You know, Dark was another was a first-round pick 3 years ago. He's the one who has to take over for Leon Hall. Drake Kirkpatrick was a starter last year. He took over for Terrence Newman, you know, that older veteran who they let go. But Adam Jones was key. Adam Jones, you know, yeah, he's been in the league 10 years, but with his suspensions and injuries, he's really only played about 5-6 years of football and arguably played the best football of his career. They feel he's still in his prime despite his age. George Iloka was important. Again, a young guy, drafted and developed, fifth round, turned into a borderline Pro Bowl player. Sean Williams is now coming up, sort of filling that Kirkpatrick-Denard role where, yes, Reggie Nelson, older guy, leaves. Sean Williams, third-round pick from 3 years ago, they give him an extension. They feel he can be that kind of core guy. So there is the names are different, guys, but there's continuity, if that makes sense. I mean, guys who've been in the rooms for 2-3 years have played. Now they need to prove it on a week-to-week basis. But that's kind of what the Bengals have done. Honestly, if you're going to win 50-plus games in 5 years, that needs to happen. And they've done it at other spots. So their hope is obviously that continues to happen with those two, you know, Sean Williams and Don Quisenart in the nickel position.
Seeing it translate from the classroom to the field, absolutely. Talking with Jim Ozarski, right, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You mentioned Leon Hall, and I know he's not with the team, Jim, but I bring him up because there were reports earlier this offseason that perhaps the Giants were looking at him, as were some other teams. Have you heard anything? I mean, he's still unsigned. You mentioned he is up there in age and some wear and tear, but are you surprised he's still on the market, number one, and have you heard anything that perhaps he will catch on with the team before training camp starts?
No to both at this point, guys. I mean, it was reported locally in Cincinnati that the team's color analyst said that he had back surgery in the offseason. You know, everyone's sort of been quiet. When you're a free agent, you don't have to tell anybody that except your potential employer. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he really – Leon Hall is – put it this way, guys – a class individual to the media, a class individual to a team. I think he will be with a team. I don't think it'll be before camp. I mean, most of these teams have their 90 men, right? So I think it'll be, you know, it's kind of like Dwight Freeney, who's been linked to a bunch of teams where you know what he is, he lost the step. Let's see how our camp develops, if there's injuries, if some of these young guys, you know, speaking generally, kind of gets flushed out. I think he'll sign somewhere in camp. When and where, who knows? But he probably could offer a little bit, especially as a backup spot.
All right, last question for me, and this has to do with Marv Lewis. You know, there was so much speculation in regard to before Hugh leaving that he went to the ownership and said, hey, listen, you know, give me one more year and then let Hugh come in next year and be the head coach. And I mean, and now there's talk that he's on the hot seat. Kind of, you know, what is that environment there like? And is it, does it not play well on a team who, I know all the players love Marv. Anyone who's been around Marv Lewis, you can't help but love the man. He's just a phenomenal guy. But, like, how is that dynamic right now in that organization? And how is it playing out with what's going on in the locker room?
Yeah, that is true. There was that discussion. Marvin Lewis admitted it. But one of the issues Hugh Jackson's in Cleveland is because, Marvin isn't ready to be done yet. So how could you say, well, I'll retire in X years ownership isn't going to put that in writing, because that creates a whole other sort of issues. So that's, so yeah, in kind of the emotions of Hugh leaving, that was discussed. How real it was, I don't know. But it, honestly, unless there's a total collapse, if they're 11-5, losing the first round again, it's hard to say, guys, because you know Mike Brown and the Bengals remember the 90s. And it's one of those things where he's getting them there, and it's hard. Honestly, my hesitation is kind of where everything's at. I mean, if they go 15-1 and lose after a bye, maybe that's the thing. If they go 5-11, but if they kind of keep the status quo, I don't know, guys. I think the team and Marvin are really comfortable together. They do a good job. I don't know if he's on a hot seat. I don't think that's accurate. I think it's easy to say. But I think sort of the extremes have to happen to really think, oh, he's in trouble for some reason. It sounds weird. I know it's kind of hedging and the hem-hawing a bit, but that's kind of where it's at. You know, they win a lot. They're one of the few that do. They just need to get over the hump. And at some point, you think that'll catch up to the head coach. But it's really hard to say that it will, because it's hard to get to that point. I think ownership understands that.
Absolutely, considering what the Giants even went through, where they won Super Bowls in between. They haven't necessarily been able to get to the playoffs. So to get into the postseason is certainly extremely meaningful. Jim Ozarski, kind enough to give us a few minutes, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Ozarski, and it's spelled O-W-C-Z-A-R-S-K-I. Jim, we're going to let you work on your handicap.
Great.
Get back to the links. We greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right, Jim Ozarski, kind enough to weigh in on the Bengals' upcoming season.
The struggle is real.
Well, you got to get in your time when you can. You know that. Before you know it, training camp starts, and then you're right in the regular season type of schedule.
What's your take on the Bengals? I don't have a good feeling about them this year. I really, really do believe that Andy Dalton is going to struggle, and this team is going to take a step back, where I think the Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to take a step forward.
Well, I was talking with this with Paul earlier in the week, and we were talking about the makeup of the AFC North, and I said, you know, I really don't see any specific team in the driver's seat, because the two teams you mentioned, as impressed I am with some of the improvements they made, there's question marks too. Pittsburgh doesn't have Martavis Bryant because of the suspension. You know, he's a big weapon in that offense.
Bell's coming off a severe knee injury.
Correct.
In repair.
The Ravens transition on defense, some new faces. Can the running game continue with Justin Forsett? Offensive line play's been a little up and down. Ronnie Stanley's going to take over left tackle. So, you know, I don't think Cincinnati's automatically in the driver's seat, nor do I think the other two teams. But I think the Bengals with continuity, as Jim hit on, I think that says a lot about this franchise. So even though Hugh Jackson's not there, remember, you know, Dalton did pretty good with Gruden too. And I don't see why he would all of a sudden take a huge step back with now a new offensive coordinator, considering it's his quarterback's coach in Ken Zampezi. Plus, you know, the fact that A.J. Green's still there. Eifert, I know, hurt, but he'll eventually come back. You still have your two running backs. You hope that Boyd and LaFell, this is the biggest question mark, can they take pressure off of A.J. Green the way that Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones did? I'm a little bit concerned about that, Anita. I'll give you that. But I feel as if they can make up for that with Jeremy Hill having a bounce-back season and Giovanni Bernard being that additional wide receiver. So I would expect them to be very much in the hunt. I'd be stunned if they take a significant step back.
Yeah, I mean, you look around the league and the talent that those two running backs, that we've seen them, like flashes of brilliance, right, with both Hill and Bernard. I think you can argue one of the best 1-2 punches in the NFL. Besides, of course, Pittsburgh, we're talking about Bell and
D'Angelo Williams.
Obviously, D'Angelo Williams stepped up in a big way last year when Bell went down. I'm thinking around. I'm previewing the league, and I'm trying to think of the backfields. I mean, you know, if the offensive line could be as good as is predicted, and these two running backs can step up, and they still commit to the ground and pound before you rely on Andy Dalton, then yeah, I mean, you know, they probably could make some noise. But I'm just not sold. I'm really not sold.
Well, whenever you lose key players, it's fair that there's question marks. It's the same thing with, you know, the secondary. Some defensive players were lost, too. Not nearly as much of a hit as on offense. And, you know, for people who may not recognize the name Marvin Jones, fantasy stats aside, he was a key component when healthy. Remember, there were some years where Marvin Jones was hurt. But I remember, if I'm correct, there was that game. I think it was the Bengals against the Jets. I want to say maybe 2 years ago, Anita. Dalton had 5 touchdown passes. I think Marvin Jones had 3 touchdown catches in that game. So, I mean, there were games where Marvin Jones would be a significant red zone target and a big piece of that offense. So that's a huge void that they can't just snap their fingers and expect a rookie like Tyler Boyd to come in all of a sudden and fill.
Yeah, and, you know, I found it to be interesting when I was at the Combine, and you know, obviously you're at the Combine to really talk about the rookies, but believe it or not, there's a lot of general managers and coaches there, and they're talking about free agency and the players that they want to go after. More coveted Marvin Jones than Mohamed Sanu. And obviously two different style of receivers,
yeah.
But in Sanu, I think more the household name for a lot of people. But Marvin Jones, in speaking to a lot of the coaches and a lot of the teams, Marvin Jones was the wide receiver of choice if they had between the two. So.
Well, Marvin Jones, I think, has been more consistent in terms of his production, and maybe this is the way the Bengals use Sanu, but Sanu was more of that jack-of-all-trades type of wide receiver, the wildcat plays that they ran with him out of the backfield, you know, deep threat, whereas Marvin Jones, I think, could run a little bit more of the route tree better overall than perhaps what Mohamed Sanu brings to the table. But it will be an interesting race in the AFC North, and we will continue to hit on that because the Giants are going to be playing that division throughout the course of the season.
Right.
But we want to open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jason is in New Jersey. He gets us going. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, yeah, I'm really high on Eli Manning this year. They talked about how they want to average 28 points per game. I just wanted to point out that in the last 5 years, 17 teams have averaged 28 points per game. 16 made the playoffs. That's 94%. So over the last 5 years, 94% of teams that averaged 28 points per game made the playoffs. That's the Giants' goal. They averaged 26.2, which means they need to increase their average by 2 points a game. The reason why I'm so high on Eli Manning is because this is the probably the best entering the season. This is probably the best interior pocket he's ever had in his career. From Justin Pugh packing on 10 pounds of muscle this offseason, which will help him anchor better because last year he gave up. He got pushed back a little bit, but that should change. He's got Weston Richburg again, another summer at the Charles Bentley School Camp, and he's going to get better. We know what he can do in pass protection, and we got John Jerry. I'm telling you right now, this guy's going to have a career year. He already has the most powerful anchor in football. We know that. The only thing he needed to tweak was his lateral quickness and his getting out of his stance quicker. That's what he's been focusing on this offseason. His technique is cleaned up. His lateral quickness is so much better. His anchor is nasty, unbeatable. So when you look at that, you got Richburg, you got 3 interior linemen against 2 defensive tackles. Your Richburg is going to help out Pugh with 1 D tackle. That means John Jerry is going to be one-on-one with the D tackle, and it's his job to hold completely firm. And because of that, giving Eli Manning that wall up the middle is what's going to allow him to light up the league, because Eli Manning has proven that he does not need great offensive tackles to succeed, okay? Last year, the Giants had the worst offensive tackle tandem. There's still liabilities right now in pass protection, but it doesn't matter because Eli Manning has proven over his career you don't need great pass blocking tackles for him to succeed. You do need to make sure that he has an interior pocket to climb into, so that when he feels the pressure coming off the edge, he can climb up into the pocket. For the receivers to get open downfield.
All right, Jason, I'm going to jump in here for a second. I appreciate your passion, all the numbers you threw out. While pass protection, you mentioned was not necessarily an issue, and it wasn't if you look statistically last season, but the tackles are imperative to get that running game going. Let's not overlook that. You know, your focus is more on pass
Absolutely.
Protection, what
so,
Eli can do,
so
but if
that,
the Giants
so
well,
yeah,
hold on here a second. If the Giants are going to improve offensively, as you noted, to get from that 26.5 to 28 points, I think a big part of that is getting that running game going, and that certainly can't be overlooked because you can't expect Eli to just do it with his arm. The running game can also help you increase the point totals this season.
Well, what will also help him increase is Sterling Shepard in the slot. So last year, what killed the offense was when Beckham was lined up outside and nobody in the slot that can consistently get open. So that even when we won the Super Bowl in 2007, 2011, we always had the outside and the slot combination with Steve Smith and Victor Cruz. So the Giants not had that last year. That means they have to put Beckham in the slot sometimes, which hurts them on the outside because now Beckham's not outside. So now you can leave Beckham on the outside. You can have Sterling Shepard in the slot. Teams aren't going to be able to defend that when Eli has a great pocket. You know, when he gets a great
Oh, did we lose Jason?
It's clean,
okay.
Clean throwing lanes. That means that the pass protection from the tackles don't really matter because if they're getting beat, they're getting beat on the outside. Eli Manning stepping up into the pocket. They're behind him. So, like I said, starts and ends with John Jerry. He is the guy that gets the toughest matchups on the offensive line. When you watch how they slide their line, they slide their line away from him. He is on an island by himself. The D tackle across from him has a two-way go. 95% of the time, he gets no help from the center. I'm looking for a career year out of him, and I'm looking for the Giants to re-sign him to a multi-year deal after the season.
All right,
he's
well,
starting right guard in 2017 and 2018.
Well, some interesting predictions, Jason, and appreciate the phone call. I wouldn't necessarily say that Jerry always gets the toughest assignments. You know, they're going to move those guys around, especially on the edge, because of Flowers. He's coming off the injury. He's still going to be tested as a young player. And then obviously they're going to test whoever ultimately is the starting right tackle, whether it be Newhouse or Hart.
Also, you know, give Eli some credit. I don't think the pass protection for him was so spectacular. He's such a savvy quarterback. He's such a savvy veteran quarterback that he was able to anticipate the rush coming and get the ball out a lot quicker, maybe than most quarterbacks would like. That's the difference I would like to see this year in regard to pass protection, is giving Eli Manning a little bit more time to make things happen and to allow things to develop and create. Granted, and you also got to give Odell Beckham Jr. credit here as well. It's not just the fact that Eli Manning gets the ball out quickly. It's the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. gets open quickly.
Well,
they
need that from the rest of the receiving corps too, Anita. I think what you just alluded to and the addition of a player like Sterling Shepard, depending on where he lines up, if he's in the slot and he could get open quickly between Eli Manning getting rid of the football and Shepard winning individual battles to complement Beckham on top of perhaps a Shane Vereen and a few other guys, the more players that get open and win their individual battles that Eli can look at quickly as he surveys the field, then he doesn't have to worry about holding on to the football for 5 or 6 seconds to go for the home run. Nobody said they need to go for the 20 to 40 yard bombs down the field. You pick up the first down with 7 to 10 yard passes, hey, that works too.
No, I'm with you. I just because Eli Manning didn't get sacked a lot last season doesn't necessarily, you know,
in terms of the stellar pass protection.
Exactly.
A lot
came into play. You still should expect, and I expect and would like to see this offensive line improve in pass protection.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, plus there's a new offensive line coach. I don't think Mike Solari walked in and said, all right, guys, we're okay in pass protection.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't have to worry about that. We'll just pick up where we left off. He's going to have some new little tricks, and he's going to bring in a different voice and a different viewpoint that perhaps they haven't heard before. So, I mean, that doesn't necessarily hurt. Not that, you know, the previous regime, you know, was not coaching these players up, but I always say sometimes if you bring a new eye in, somebody who sees something from a different perspective, that can only help a player's development, even a young guy like Eric Flowers. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Mark in New York. Mark, what's happening?
Good day, guys.
Good day to you, Mark. What do you got for us?
I had I'm not exactly the O-line, but more of the running game. I mean, of course, the O-line involves the running game. But if you just bear with me for a moment, is it possible that the passing game, first of all, we finished, I think, sixth in the league last year in passing. So this question was, like, out of my league, and I had to bring it to you so you could set me straight on it. It was, is it possible that our lack of production from the second and third wide receiver, you know, like dropping passes and pretty much forcing the defense to double up on Odell and tighten him up and not allow him to get as open as fast as he would normally. Is it possible that the running game suffered from that? And the only reason why I ask that question is because somebody kind of gave me an idea about how they broke their leg and how they tried to compensate with their leg by using their other leg a little bit more and had sprained their other leg. And I said, Dag, that's almost like because you had to depend on one thing more. There's something else, I guess you overdid it. And is that kind of, can you make any sense to that? Is it possible that with the additions that we have now, not like we super, super upgraded the offense, but I mean, you got more confidence in your passing because you got more talent and more ceiling to grow. Is it possible that our offense on the run side could benefit from our passing being more, I guess this is important?
Well, the more potent your passing game is, you know, the better opportunities you're going to have for the running game. I think those two go hand in hand. There's no question, Mark, that even though the numbers look good and they finished seventh in passing in the NFL last year, there were times where during the season Eli Manning didn't have the same personnel on the field. And, you know, it's hard to build continuity. There were some games where, you know, Dwayne Harris and Odell Beckham were the 1-2 punch. There were other games where then late in the season Miles White became a big part of the receiving core. You know, Randall up and down throughout the course of the year. So if you have a trio of Beckham, Shepard, and Cruz that's on the field consistently game to game, yeah, that should open up your passing game even more. And then all of a sudden you got to think, all right, if you're a defense, you know, we got to worry about now having three reliable corners to match up with these guys. We can't bring a corner and have him cheat and come down to the line of scrimmage to help with the running game. So, I mean, I would assume the more continuity you have in the personnel groupings, the more crisp the passing game is, yeah, that should certainly open things up for the running game.
I was almost saying that just because I kind of felt like that's where, I mean, I know the running game sort of suffered, but didn't we average like 100 yards and was like 18th in the league in running, rushing rather?
In terms of where the Giants finished in rushing the football, let's see, I got those numbers. They were 19th in the NFL. They averaged 101 yards. But keep in mind, Mark, I think what boosted that average where the respectability of where they finished is not bad is as a result of what they did in the last four games. When Rashad Jennings took off against the Dolphins, remember, in those last four games, the running game really reached new heights. They want to see that, though, happen for the other three quarters of the season, not just the final quarter of the year. Yeah.
Of course. But, I was just curious about that, wondering if, you know, the lack of, you know, production from the second and third last year maybe kind of hit the running game in the behind a little bit. I had one more thing. I'm going to take this off the air. I have been dying to talk to you for about a month, Lance, and it was something that you rang in my ear about quarterbacks that are playing as backups that never started and went to another team. Would Hasselbeck meet that criteria? Because you and Anita had a discussion a long time ago about Ryan Nassib, and she thinks that he might be a starting quarterback in the NFL somewhere. And he was like, well, that could be possible, but at the same time, how many quarterbacks have ever left a team as a backup and went to another team and was a starter? Does Matt Hasselbeck, I don't think he fits the criteria, but he's the only one I could come up with out of that challenge that you had challenged the fans with, because I think I think the head coach from
Mike Holmgren
Green Bay went over there.
No, you're 100% right.
So I don't know if that I kind of think he was insinuating nobody that you know is at the new organization, that he was a backup from an old organization and came to a new organization and did good. So I don't know if my selection was legit.
Well, I certainly appreciate, Mark, and appreciate the phone call. First of all, I appreciate you continue to thinking about it. What I was bringing up, and it was about Ryan Nassib, I was talking about a quarterback that made no regular season starts during the course of their rookie contract, then hit the market, and then received a lucrative deal and the legitimate opportunity to start with another team. And I think Rob Johnson may be one of the guys that was thrown out to me on Twitter who you could throw into the conversation.
Tampa Bay Bucks.
Rob Johnson, that was Jacksonville, and then Buffalo. Those two teams, the Rob Johnson I'm talking about.
Okay.
He was actually with Coughlin and so forth. That's the Rob Johnson I'm referring to.
Okay. I'm thinking of another Johnson.
You may be thinking – I think you're thinking of Brad Johnson. That's who you're thinking of.
Possibly.
With the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Scott Mitchell, Dolphins.
I'd have to look up his
– Went to Detroit.
I believe though, he was a veteran who had a few starts, if I'm correct. But with Hasselbeck, he was –
Oh, you're saying has never had a start.
I'm talking about never had a regular season start. Regular season. I'm not talking
right.
Never had a regular season start through the course of the rookie contract.
Well, right now, too. Chase Daniels. Did Chase Daniels ever have a regular season start? But now, who's he?
No, he's not necessarily penciled in to be the starter. Sam
no,
Bradford
but,
is.
No, but, I mean, there's talk that, you know.
Well, but let's get there before we crown somebody. In terms of Matt Hasselbeck, who was interesting, Hasselbeck, remember, started off with the Packers, was a backup quarterback to Brett Favre, then was traded to the Seahawks. But, you know, what Mark hinted to on the line, and this is why I don't necessarily put this at the top of the list, Holmgren had familiarity with Hasselbeck because he was the head coach of the Packers. So he goes to the Seahawks and he says, hey, I need a quarterback. Well, I'm going to trade for somebody I'm familiar with. The example would be if somebody on the Giants coaching staff went elsewhere, became a GM or a head coach and said, you know what, I worked with Nassim, I'm comfortable, I want to bring him in as my starter.
Right.
Yeah, that gives the quarterback a much better opportunity. I'm talking about him going somewhere where he knows nobody. The edge is where you go to a team where you have a standing relationship with an executive, because obviously you can have an edge. They know you. They know what you could do.
Well, there's two instances where the organization decided to go with the backup quarterback and let the star franchise quarterback that had been starting for them before let go. And that was San Diego when they decided it was time for Phillip Rivers to come in, and they let Drew Brees, who, by the way, Drew Brees, look at the success that he had in New Orleans after he was kind of shoved out of San Diego. And there was a lot of turmoil there. There was some split sides. There were a number of people who did not want to see Drew Brees go. And obviously we've seen the career of Phillip Rivers, but that was coming to a head, and the organization decided to go with the backup. And then also in Green Bay, you know, I mean, Brett Favre wasn't ready to retire, but the organization let him go, and we saw what happened. Jets, Minnesota. And look at Aaron Rodgers' career. So
well, but I mean, Brett Favre was a better quarterback at that point.
I guess you knew
what he could do.
I guess my point is, a lot of times I think an organization has to make a decision: who are they going to go with? But it's obvious here that, you know, this organization, especially the contract that they just signed Eli Manning to, that it's Eli. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think this situation presents itself often in the NFL.
No, and that's what my point was.
Yeah.
It's extremely rare,
yes,
no
yes,
matter how you
yeah,
analyze it,
yes,
for a backup quarterback under those circumstances. Let's head back to the Lions. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. You can also send in your tweets, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to a few tweets along the way. We got Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Anita.
Hey.
Welcome back.
How are you, Charlie?
Doing?
Doing all right.
Hey, I want to throw in, you were just talking, how about Brett Favre? He was
we were just talking about that in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And he got traded. He never had a snap, I don't think, in Atlanta. And then he ended up starting for Green Bay shortly after.
Oh, there was another quarterback, although he did have some starts. And the organization, Atlanta, decided to go with Michael Vick over
Matt Schaub, you're talking about?
Yes.
He was traded to Houston.
Right, but
yeah,
he
but
had...
those are trades again. All of the guys we're bringing up are trades. My initial question with respect to Nassib was free agency. Your contract expires, you test the market, and so
Lance,
forth.
Yeah. You got it so narrowed down.
Well, but that was the whole
scenario to ever happen.
Well, more of a reason, that was my whole point. Charlie, you just made my case. That was the whole point. That's it's virtually impossible to see that happen.
Yeah.
That was my point.
Hey, another thing is virtually
And by the way,
possible.
Brett Favre appeared in two games with the Falcons. I just looked it up, just for factual standpoint. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Hey, I just heard Eli, well, I saw Eli's quote or whatever. He says he wants to start throwing more deep balls down the field. Well, that ain't going to happen unless Solari's playing right tackle, because he's not going to have the time. That's his problem. He didn't have the time to throw deep balls, and I don't see how that's going to change with Flowers. Maybe he's going to be better, but we don't know yet. But on the right side, we still have a problem. And I'm asking all Giants fans, I know everyone's getting excited, camp starting, but everyone should tweet Eugene Monroe and beg him to come to New York. because I already tweeted him. I said I'd send him a bunch of Maine lobsters if
Charlie.
He signs with the Giants.
Charlie.
We need a right tackle.
Oh,
Charlie.
Yes?
Okay. You're an offensive lineman in the NFL, and you make insane money playing on the left side of the line and adequate money playing on the right side of the line, and you still feel that you are left side of the line material. Are you going to want to go somewhere and play a right side and make less money?
Well, the thing is, he's you know, he might not have an offer to play the left side.
Well,
right
that's
now.
Okay, but okay, that's not that wasn't my question to you. He's obviously sitting around waiting for that left side offer, right?
Well, I don't know what he's sitting around for. He might be just sitting around waiting for an offer. Period.
Charlie, you don't think this dude has an offer to play the right side of the line anywhere?
I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know anything.
Nothing's been reported here. I don't know if the Giants have made an offer or not. I don't know. What I'm telling you is that if I'm an offensive lineman and I look at the difference of what blind side linemen make compared to right side linemen, and I still feel that I have it and that there's a potential that at some point in time a team's going to need a left tackle, and I feel I still have it and I can make that kind of dough, I'm going to hold out and I'm going to wait.
Well, he's going to get a 1-year deal most likely, and if I was the Giants, I would pay him as a left tackle, and then you've got him on the right side, and then Flowers just bombs out this year on the left side. Then you've got somebody you can move over to the left, and you can move Flowers over to the right. So you have some options. You know, all I'm saying is like the Giants better shore up the right side, or Eli's not going to be able to throw the ball down the field deep like he wants to. That's all I'm saying. I mean, now Eli spoke about it. He's the one that said he wanted to get the ball downfield more, and I just don't see how you can do that if he hasn't got the time to do that.
Well, the running game, though, Charlie, you know, and I sound like a broken record because I brought it up early in the show, but the running game is also hopefully going to help ease the pass protection, the amount of pressure that the offensive line has to deal with. Because, I mean, think about this, Charlie. Last season, you're a defense going up against the Giants offense, and you saw for the majority of the year that they had trouble establishing the run game, and then you take into consideration the injuries in the receiving core. How are you now all of a sudden defending the Giants, Charlie? Aren't you bringing more guys up to the line of scrimmage? Aren't you taking your chances with more pressure under those circumstances? If you're a defensive coordinator and you're not overly worried about the running game, aren't you going to now try to pressure Eli Manning as much as possible? Whereas if you have more continuity on the ground this season, now you got to pick your poison. So I think that will also help, in addition to what you're talking about with respect to the O-line, the configuration
of the
offense.
Yeah, I agree, but we couldn't run on the right side. So what's going to change when you have the same two players on the right side?
Well, first of all, let's see how the offensive line battle plays out, Charlie. Remember, Ben McAdoo has not named anybody on the offensive line and has not named any starters. I mean, listen, you could chuckle all you want, but in all seriousness, we have yet to have one scrimmage or one practice in training camp yet. So, I mean, we're going with the projected five, but who's to say that the two guys who started on the right side are going to be the starters day one, week one? I mean, I don't know right now. I think they're in the front row seat. But perhaps Mike Solari and Ben McAdoo want to make some changes. I mean, we don't know right now. Way too early to tell.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But if you look at the depth of our old line, it's pretty scary on the players that we have.
Well, but that's what training camp needs to bring out. I agree with you. Training camp needs to show. It's show me time for a lot of these guys, Charlie.
I know.
It's show me time. But we're only going to know that until training camp starts. Right now, it's basically the same conversation going in circles. Everybody's got to step up. They got to fight.
Exactly.
They got to battle. Yeah.
And we also can tweet, Gene Monroe, please come. You know?
Didn't you know
he's loved.
Wait. Charlie, let me ask you a question, just to show your track record, your campaign. If I'm not correct, did you not tweet JPP earlier this year? Weren't you asking him to campaign on your behalf to speak to other linemen or so forth?
Yes.
Correct. Now, let me ask you a question. Did JPP happen to respond to your tweet? This is what I'm dying to know. Are you still waiting on the response?
He did, indirectly.
Indirectly, he responded. Wow, this is great.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because I guess somebody was saying, a reporter, that Dwight Freeney is becoming into camp from two NFC East teams. So hopefully we're one of them. I kind of doubt it. But I'm hoping that we're one of them to bring in Freeney. So maybe JP has done some work.
Okay. Well, it's nice to know that you were tagged along in that tweet. I really, it means so much to me, Charlie, knowing how hard you work in the northeast area of the U.S. Charlie, it's good talking with you. Glad
okay,
to have
guys.
You back after the lengthy hiatus. We will speak soon.
Yes.
Charlie in Portland, Maine, giving in his two cents about the offensive line, which clearly he will continue to emphasize as we make our way to the start of the regular season. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. We come a little bit closer to us. Javon is on Staten Island. Javon, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I'm so happy that you are back. I'm really having a football season drought right now. So I'm playing Madden, watching old tape, stalking you guys on social media, tweeting you. By the way, Lance, I think you're adorable. I know I have a deep voice, but I'm a female, so it's okay.
No, John, you've called before. You're one of our regulars.
Yes. But I don't call that often, not as often as I would like to, because I don't want to be Charlie.
You don't want to enter Charlie. That territory, Javon. Are you sure? Because he's in such a unique category. That,
no.
You know, we have a separate area for them, even in our studio that we're reconfiguring. You know, we're building a wall just for Charlie. So, you know, you may have an opportunity as you build up a resume, Javon. You know, don't shy away from wanting to stand out from the rest of the pack here.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Because I actually have a radio show of my own, an internet radio show, so I'd rather be like Shakes, you know?
I hear you.
Although my show is not like a football show, but it ought to be. Anyway, it should all be about the Giants because that's what I'm all about. I don't have the same concerns that Charlie has about the offensive line. Yeah, I'm concerned about it, the right side, blah, blah, blah. But I think that the offense did pretty well last year, and I can only see it improving with the talent that we have now. So that's not my big concern. My big concern is the tackling that we had in the secondary. The linebackers were really horrible. It was really, really bad. And while you guys were out, I was watching a lot of footage, and some of the guys we still have on the defense, they were just, like, missing tackles left and right. It was like I could have been out there. It's just terrible. So I'm wondering what, if anything, we're doing to improve that.
Well, keep in mind, remember, part of the changes with the coaching staff, one of the changes was at the linebacker position, Javon. Not that, once again, you know, saying anything about the old regime, but new voices, new things that you bring into practice. And I could tell you, I was watching the linebackers pretty closely during the course of OTAs because there's a number of new faces, and it's a pretty deep group. So the group stands out. A big emphasis in OTAs, and this is just beyond the linebacking core, Javon, is the emphasis on fundamentals for just about every position. That's what Ben McAdoo said. One of the things he wanted to focus on in the offseason program was, guys, we got to go back to the basics. You know, we can't worry about the flashy plays and so forth. We got to make sure, you know, ball's on the floor, you grab it, you secure it, and then we all of a sudden have a new drive and a new run to get through. And it was the same thing with, you know, tackling, working with the dummies to make sure your positioning is right. That's been a big focus. How it's going to translate, Javon, hey, that remains to be seen based on once they put the pads on. But to answer your question, that emphasis, that facet has certainly been a big part of the conversation during the course of the offseason.
And my last question, because you see all of this garbage throughout the off season about predictions and so forth and so on, and every year I get my hopes up. Every year I'm like, the Giants are going back to the playoffs, you know, every year. And I'm really amped up about the new additions that we have on defense, and I'm thinking that with those additions, that would have changed some of the outcomes of those six games that we all cry about now, in hindsight. So, honestly, do you guys think we have a shot at going to the playoffs?
I do. I think we've got to have a great shot. And interesting that you bring that up, because prior to us starting the show, I shared with Lance, if you go to ESPN.com, there's a question right now. It's who will win the division and how many teams from the division will make the playoffs. And these are all their NFL beat reporters. Graziano, as you know, who covered the Giants, he says that Dallas will edge out the Washington Redskins, but he does feel that Washington will go in as a wild card. Phil Sheridan feels that the same thing, that that it's Washington and Dallas. Todd Archer, who covers the Dallas Cowboys, feels that that it's Dallas and no other team will qualify as a wild card. And John Keem, and I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, who covers the Washington Redskins, also feels that it's Dallas and Washington. Not one beat reporter who covers the NFC East believes that the Giants will make it into the postseason, and that's shocking to me. With the amount of money that this team has spent defensively, how good this defensive line can be in the NFL, how you would rank them, some have them top 10. Eli Manning in the third year under Ben McAdoo's system, you add Sterling Shepard to the mix with Odell Beckham Jr., you hope this offensive line gets better, that they're more committed to the rushing attack, and the fact that they were just minutes away from winning a number of games that definitely would have gotten them into the discussion of making it to the postseason last year. I don't know how you don't even consider them a wild card, not even a wild card, Lance. Like, that article is just, and I'll use the word shocking, it's shocking to me that they're not even in the mix or the discussion as a wild card.
Well, it's interesting because, actually, if you look at the track record and the history, and Javon, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, and good luck with that radio show, by the way. It seems as if a number of our listeners are starting their own podcast, which is nice to hear. Getting back to your point, Anita, years where the Giants have been the underdogs, they've actually turned out to have much more success than perhaps when they are picked. And they tend to be tabbed as the favorites. If there's anything to read into that, perhaps, once again, I don't get caught up in projections. I don't get caught up in predictions because you could pretty much sit down a boatload of writers and they're all going to have different perspectives and they're all going to have different opinions. I say this every year, and my viewpoint of the division hasn't changed this year. I think it's one of the most wide open divisions in all of football because I see a bunch of teams with a number of question marks. And I don't think that the team that won the division last year is necessarily in the driver's seat where they have no issues and they have no concerns. You know, Washington certainly on offense looks good on paper, but, you know, can Kirk Cousins pick up where he left off? That's still going to be a question mark, considering he only has one full season under his belt. And, you know, defensively, you know, they had mixed results. They weren't necessarily a juggernaut of a defense. Nobody in the NFC East was a juggernaut of a defense. So, I mean, we could sit here and make a case for all four teams to win the division. And I don't think anybody would look at you like you're crazy. So they're going to be in the hunt. But here's the one thing I will say about last season. I don't think that you can automatically look at last season, Anita, and I'm curious your perspective because a few callers have brought this up and say, you know, well, they were so close with a number of games. And, you know, the ball bounces this way, the ball bounces that way. So that means that with new talent and better execution, you take five or six of those close losses and you automatically turn them into wins. And the reason why I can't go that direction so quickly is, remember, the talent has changed all across the NFL landscape. So close games that the Giants had with their opponents last year, you can't guarantee that it's going to happen again. Because while you improve as a team, while the roster changes for you, the roster's changing all across the NFL. So I don't think it's so simple to say, oh, well, five or six games were close last year. They went the wrong way. They can easily turn that around with new talent. You know, got to see how the team plays out.
I'm with you. I agree with that. And it's you know, every season it's a new storyline. Yeah. It's a new chapter. And you're right. Teams change. Some get better. Some get worse. But, I mean, this is a team last year that, when you look at their stats, I mean, one of the worst teams in regard to rushing the ball, one of the worst teams in regard to the offensive line, one of the worst teams in sacking the quarterback, what, 23 sacks last season? I want to say they ranked 30th in the NFL. I mean, there was just so many negatives, but yet they were so close. And now this is a team that went and addressed a lot of those negatives, and this team is much better this season. Granted, yes. Is Dallas better? Yes. But I'll tell you what, and this is what surprises me. The Dallas Cowboys did not solidify their backup quarterback position. I'm sorry. Brandon Whedon, what? They drafted what? A rookie's going to come in?
No, I'm just saying. I mean, they did address it from that perspective.
But I mean now. I mean, like, Tony Romo goes down, season's over. Done. I'm sorry. No offense to Brandon Whedon, but, I mean, come on. So if you feel that you are that close, if you feel you have the best offensive line in the NFL, you've got the best receiver in the NFL in Dez Bryant, you go out, you draft a stud running back in Ezekiel Elliott who's going to see daylight forever and could potentially rush for, I don't know, 1,200, 1,300 yards this season. All these exciting things on the offensive side of the ball, right? Which we know that's how you win in the NFL these days, is putting up those points. why not solidify, why not go out and really bring in a quarterback who, if Tony Romo goes down, you're not going to miss a beat, or at least try not to miss a beat. I would imagine you agree with me. Romo goes down, season's over.
Well, if you look at what happened last season, I mean, I don't really think the roster changed enough to say that if that happens again, that all of a sudden it's going to be a different outcome, especially with, you know, all of the issues that you didn't even mention on defense that they have. I mean, half of their defensive line is suspended for a quarter of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, they're also in a bad position at the linebacker situation with McClain and moving Sean Lee perhaps back to the middle. He's had injury concerns. I mean, clearly they got plenty of headaches with the injury bug. The Giants, unfortunately, can relate to that as well. But in fairness, this is what I will say. I think you could pretty much say that for just about everybody in the division, with the exception of really the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, and the Giants, who certainly have Ryan Nassib, he's got experience. But the Eagles are really the only team in the division that have a few veteran options if their starter goes down. You know, Washington behind Kirk Cousins, and then you look at the Cowboys, as we mentioned, youth. And in the Giants, like I said, Nassib's got familiarity with the system, but experience-wise, Philadelphia has a few other options with experience. If you wanted to at least make the comparison across the board.
I honestly believe that Nassib, and the fact that he's been playing under Eli Manning and he knows this system just as much as Eli, and some people say can run it even better than Eli because of his athleticism and his ability to pass on the run better than Eli can. I actually think in this division, I think the Giants have the best 1-2 punch situation with the quarterback situation. I really do, better than the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, that's my take. Philadelphia, I think this is going to be a rebuilding year for them. I think they know that. I don't think there's any pressure there for them to win now. They're coming off of a major collapse from what happened with Chip Kelly. I don't think there's pressure there. It's kind of like Hugh Jackson in Cleveland. There's no pressure for Hugh Jackson to win now, next year, or even 3 years from now. I think their game plan is 5 years from now. So, for me, in this division, I think the team to fear is Washington. I love the fact that Kirk Cousins is playing on a franchise tag. I love the fact that he's taken a page out of Joe Flacco's playbook.
He's betting on himself.
I think Kirk Cousins, same situation. He's been in Jay Gruden's system now. Very comfortable. I love the fact that they went out and they drafted Josh Dotson. I think Josh Dotson was, hands down, the best wide receiver coming into this league this season out of the draft. I think Washington is going to be a force to be right. So for me, if I was a beat writer and I'm replying to this article, again, it's on ESPN.com, I'd say Giants and Washington. I think it's going to be a battle for the Giants and the Washington Redskins to make it in as either winning the NFC or as a wild card. And I think they both make it, by the way.
Well, that's what it really was last season, too. I mean, when you look back, as bad as the division was overall, the Giants, remember, if you go back to that critical Redskins game in D.C., I mean, those were the two teams in the driver's seat. So, I mean, it could very well come down to that. We're assuming, though, these teams are not going to be hovering around 500 so much this season. I would think that the records are going to be improved across the board, especially, you know, if Romo stays healthy, Washington a little bit more experienced, the Giants in better shape, more balanced. It's not going to be necessarily 8-8 that's going to get you to the promised land and so forth. But, you know, as we just laid out, a lot of question marks across the board for all of these teams. That's why, I mean, if somebody wants to say that there's somebody that's going to run away with this division, I'd love to hear that case.
And I
just don't see it right now.
You know, it was interesting. I played golf yesterday with a group of guys, and we were having this discussion. And you know, at one point, the discussion got to the point where, you know, coming off the heels of what Kevin Durant has done and him deciding to go to Golden State, isn't this what makes the NFL so great? Is like, Going into this year's NBA season, does anyone expect Golden State Warriors to not win the championship with that crew? And if you do, maybe there's two or three other teams that you can say, well, they have a shot. Going into this NFL season, it's wide open. I mean, out of the 32 teams, I think it's safe. I think you could say
twelve to fifteen
teams. I think you could sit back and say, "Wow, listen, this." I mean, nobody has the Giants on the roster to win the Super Bowl or even make it to the playoffs this year. So, I think that's what makes the NFL so great. We'll sit here, we can talk about our expectations and all that, but once the season starts, man, you're on a magical carpet ride. You don't know where you're going.
Well, parity is the magical word, and it's showcased in the NFL unlike any other sport. So that's what I think separates this league from any other. And that's at least personally why, you know, I get more excited about the NFL than any other, because like I said, I can make a case for half the league to win the Super Bowl. I can't necessarily do that in the NBA. I can't do that in Major League Baseball. And I can't do that in the NHL. So compared to the four professional sports, I think the NFL takes the cake in that department. And that is going to wrap up things for us. Certainly appreciate Jim Ozarski for coming on.
Wow, that was a quick hour.
It was a quick hour, indeed. Between the calls, between the Bengals talk, and between the dissection of the NFC East. There you go. That's a program. So we certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. As I mentioned, Jim Ozarski from the Cincinnati Inquirer for breaking down the Bengals as we continue our preview of all of the upcoming Giants opponents this season. You, the listeners, on the phones as well as via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, you can continue to use off the air. We will try to get back to you as soon as possible. In terms of tomorrow's program, we're going to have a special program where it's going to be strictly interviews. We're going to be previewing the Cleveland Browns. We're going to be previewing the Chicago Bears. And we're also going to have an interview with former Giants general manager Ernie Accorsi, who is going to be inducted into the Ring of Honor. So stay tuned for that tomorrow. It'll be a lot of talk across the NFL landscape, but Ernie Accorsi reflecting on his tenure with the Giants. Stay tuned for that, as that will air on Giants.com tomorrow. And training camp is going to get underway next week. Friday will be the first practice. Head to Giants.com if you want to see the full schedule, when you're available to come down, if you're thinking about visiting the Giants complex and so forth. And Thursday, the players are going to report. And before you know it, as Anita said off the top, we're going to be up and running. So appreciate everybody once again for tuning in. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.